Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about JFrog Artifactory, a place to put your artifacts for your continuous integration and delivery systems. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett, episode 457, recorded November 1st, 2017, JFrog Artifactory. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. And by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day, totally unaware of it, projects you might want to download right after this show and play with. Today's probably going to be one of those. Joining me once again, been so long, Jonathan. Jonathan Bennett, welcome back to the show.
Yes, it's just been ages since I've been here. I couldn't stand to be apart from you any longer.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you stepped forward because, again, we're having difficulty sometimes in getting our rotating panel of co-hosts fully up to speed again. So I'm glad you're almost always available, which makes it sort of easy for me to do scheduling. And I'm almost always available, except when I'm on a cruise. So that kind of works out pretty nice that way. So you're speaking to us from the flyover place that I actually flew over on Monday. So hello in your general direction here. All right. And yes. For those of you that are seeing the video background, I am back home in Beaverton, Oregon. Just flew in on Monday from where was I? I was in Baltimore hanging out with friends over there. So I'm still a little jet lagged, but also I had a bad stomach ache last night. So I'm operating on almost zero sleep. So I apologize in advance for anything that doesn't work today because it might just be a little crazy. So who do we have today? We have, let me make sure I get this right, JFrog Artifactory, the Universal Artifact Repository. I think we're going to win some buzzword bingo today. Fred Simon is the co-founder and chief architect of JFrog. And so he's going to be coming on in a few minutes to tell us what that is all about. Here's what my guess is so far. We have package managers that have grown up with Linux, different ones for different distributions. But as we move more into DevOps and changing things like that, we actually need to track a lot more binaries in our systems to be deployed, to be tested, to go through continuous integration, things like that. And so JFrog Artifactory is one of the probably one of the premier ones in this area, and all written in Java, by the way, so it's going to be sort of fun. I think it is anyway, well, based on what I read. And then we'll be talking to Fred Simon about this, so we don't have to keep making stuff up because I'm now running out of things to say. Do you have anything to add to that?
So I am going to be the representative of the audience today because I know basically nothing about this project. So I get to ask all of the dumb questions so that everyone better understands it.
Sure. We'll bring Fred Simon on in a moment. Before we do that, I have a very important announcement because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring our guest on. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. Thank you. And, Thank you for having me on.
Where are you speaking to us from?
So I'm here in actually the JFrog R&D headquarters in Israel.
Israel, cool. Well, that's one of the farthest shows we've done in a while. So we used to do a bunch of them in Brazil and things, but it seems to have died down a little bit. But so give us a 30,000-foot view. When I'm reaching for Artifactory, what problem am I trying to solve?
So, well, what you described was actually quite good. So you had a really good vision of what we are doing. We created JFrog Artifactory as an open source. So it's Yoav Landman, the other co-founder, that started the project in 2006 to scratch his own itch as a developer, because there was way too many packages and versions that he needed to manage and to integrate into his own project. Today, basically, you don't write code from scratch and C and assembly code. You most of projects and most software that is written today, 25% is new code, 75% is just library and other artifacts that are coming from open source, by the way, mostly, and other vendor libraries. So by the large amount, due to the large amount of library that you need to manage, the version change and things, he needed something locally that you can control. You can see what's going on. You can block some of the library that you know they have any kind of issues or on performance or security or things like that. And very rapidly, it became a very popular open source project, and we decided to create JFrog together in 2008. To monetize on the success of the open source. And since then, huge success driving the DevOps wave, trying not to be submerged by it, and providing all our users and customer with Artifactory and the other tools to increase their DevOps flow. At the end of the day, this is what we are doing. It's enabling our customer to release faster and to create better software faster. We have a tagline that I really like at JFrog. It's release fast or die.
Nice. And so where does this fit in the pipeline? Is this sort of sitting after my version control system but before my continuous integration, continuous deployment stuff?
So actually, this is what's funny, is that we are the pipe in the wall of the DevOps. We are the one that are taking the binaries from the external sources, the library, into your Jenkins, to give it to your Jenkins, taking whatever Jenkins is building. So I'm taking Jenkins as a CI server. We support also other kind of integration with Bamboo and TeamCity and Trevis and CircleCI and all these other continuous integration server that exist out there. Taking what they are doing, passing it to the next stage, which can be a QA test and so on, and to the next stage of integration. Also, creating bigger services, creating RPM, Debian, Docker images, and continue like that and create bigger and bigger piece of software. So we are the conveyor belt of the DevOps flow. We are the one transferring the binaries from stage to stage, all the way to the production, to the end customer, to the end users, and to the actual runtime. We have a lot of big customers that are using Artifactory in their data center, in their runtime, and in their shops to actually provide the artifacts and the software and the binaries in every shape or form and formats that exists out there to the final runtime.
And so this would integrate at the tail end with something like Kubernetes for deployment?
Yes. Yeah, we are a Docker registry. We are one of the first, and I will say so. Yeah, we. This is what's funny. I think we suck at marketing, like we said, but we're getting better. We are actually the number one Docker registry out there. Whenever you see really big production Docker deployment, we are the one behind the scene. providing the artifacts. For example, there is a company that make some really good show that involved the winter is coming, and you will not be able to get if we are not working behind the scene.
Awesome. We actually have a question from the chat room. Emily the Strange, a frequent visitor to our chat room, says, how long does this process take? Is there a real life example you can provide to show what the process looks like?
Yeah, so we are building the pipes. So we are not the CI server. We are not the one providing the fluid and the speed at which it goes. We are making sure that the pipe are flawless and that there is no intrusion or things like that. But most of the times, once we start to get into the process with a customer, we started with Netflix, was one of our first early customers in 2009. So Netflix, Yahoo, Twitter, Facebook, I mean, all the big ones, this is how we started. Now we extend to more traditional software vendors. They were releasing once a week. Today at Netflix, it's more than 9,000 services or microservices that is deployed every single day. So wow. We are basically providing this capability to increase. With Oracle, all the middleware layer, when we started with them, so it was Oracle, it was once a year. Today, they do it in their cloud once a week. So this is the kind of release increase and release fast increase. We are one part of the puzzle. Huh? We are not the silver bullet. Install JFrog and suddenly your releases are weekly. But we are really proud of being capable of enabling this change in a lot of big software vendors.
Now, let's talk also a little bit about the commercial versions, because I see that it's not only the open source version, which I presume is reasonably featured. I could bring that down and use it for my deployments. But what else do you get when you start going above the spectrum of the open source version?
Yeah. So I used to do a talk for quite some time about how we manage the transition from an OSS to actually monetize an open source software, because I really like, when we started the company and we started to go to venture capital, to VCs, and we were pitching that we are a developer tool which is open source, which is popular, and we want your money. To make it monetize, they all look at us, okay. So we didn't manage to raise money very early on. And so what we decided to do is to go online. It was not called SaaS at the time. It was 2009. And so we said we can manage the open source software in the cloud for our customer and our users. They will pay us for the maintenance and the hardware and the actual software as a service, and we will provide the open source software as a service, and we will get. And so we are really proud of being SaaS and on-prem first. We are JFrog, we are Amphibian. we go on-prem and in the cloud. And so when we started that, we started to add some extra professional feature in the cloud, which are mainly around LDAP, so some kind of connection to authentication mechanism in a big enterprise, advanced search, promotion, tagging. And to be frank, the big boom and the big increase in terms of feature was the what we call the build info. The build info is we started with Jenkins and then we extended, is the ability to capture and to create this manifest of everything that is used and everything that is produced at every step in every job, every Jenkins job at the beginning, and keep this inside your binary repository manager, and so to be able to manipulate it as a bundle. As a block transparently and efficiently. And we started on top of this to add a lot of feature which are part of the professional version, like promotions. So to say, okay, this specific build pass integration test, I'm going to promote it. And here the power of having a central binary repository manager shines, because basically we started with TiVo, for example. They used to do that whenever they had a version and they wanted to provide it to some of their partners or some of the different set-top box. They do everything with RPM. So they had this 2 terabyte of multiple RPM repository. And each one of them is a little bit different, and each one of them recopy the same list of RPMs. But inside Artifactory, basically, it becomes pointer arithmetic. And so we can recalculate the RPM index of multiple YUM repositories by reusing the same pointer to the same RPM. And this kind of promotion model allow our enterprise customer to put security feature on saying, only when some kind of condition you can push to promotion to production. But putting to production those gigabyte of RPM is a zero storage cost operation. It's an immediate operation because it's just pointer arithmetic, and Artifactory very rapidly and efficiently in a couple of seconds recalculate the YUM index and provide it to the end users.
Hey, Fred, I wanted to jump in and ask you a couple of maybe more basic questions, because this is not something that I've worked with a whole lot. You talk about Artifactory as being one of the building blocks of this, and it is, let me read, the Universal Artifact Repository. What is an artifact?
So that's the that's our burden. Is that there is no concept of a binary software, a library, an NPM packages, a Ruby gems. So we can list, there is the Chef supermarket, there is the Python eggs and the Python wheels, which are the ones. So we have a lot of jokes at JFrog about the fact that we know how to break eggs, but we don't know how to hide wheels. But we support all of them. We know how to talk the REST API of this PyPI, all these different tools, Docker. So Docker is managing images and layers. And so we know how to talk to all those clients, provide the right artifact with the right version for the right context at the right time, and of course, receive them. So to deploy them as fast as possible from whoever is building these packages back into the Artifactory. So we try to find a word that represents library, packages, application, images, everybody, and artifacts. It sounds right. And Artifactory is a very catchy name, so it worked good for us. But that's why we call it the Universal Artifacts Manager.
Sure. So the concept of Java is you seem to be steeped in it. I assume everything is built in Java. And then I was also going to ask, do you support languages other than Java? It sounds like you do. If you want to talk about that a bit.
Yeah, we started with Java. So that's a little bit why the J in front of JFrog. that was our itch to manage Maven Java jars. But very rapidly, we went to RPM because we distributed RPM and we wanted to manage Red Hat and Yum. And RPM system. We supported after NuGet and then RubyGems. And then it started to be a little bit of a burden for us to manage all these disks. And we created a really nice internal architecture that enabled us to provide more and more languages. So, yes, we support Ruby, Python, C++. We just acquired a company which is called Conan from Conan.io, which is the first actually really good package manager for C++ library. So RPM, Debian is very popular, Docker also, OPKG for some of the IoT embedded devices. I'm forgetting. We have more than 15 package manager now that we support, and we keep adding some all the time.
So you just said something that made my antennas go up. OPKG, do you work with the OpenWRT guys then? Is that what you're referring to? Oh, interesting. Yes. Tell me about that.
Yes, actually, it's a customer. It's actually Bosch that is doing this and distributing this. And we are the one distributing the packages all the way to the cars and the car system of the Bosch system.
Oh, interesting.
We are really proud. So they use, by the way, to distribute that every 6 months. And now we are in a weekly basis on this process. So a developer can, if everything goes right and everything is okay, can actually have a new piece of code deployed to some of the Bosch machine in a week.
Huh. You mentioned Maven just a moment ago, and that was something that I was wondering about. You know, everyone that's done Android development, I assume, has used Maven at some point. Does JFrog, the Artifactory, does it kind of replace Maven, or does it work side by side? What's the relationship between those two projects look like, or the comparison?
So Android is a very good point because we actually support Gradle. We actually are JCenter. I don't know. You did some Android development with Gradle?
Yes, I've done. Mm-hmm.
So you have this repository JCenter. I don't know if you saw it at the beginning. JCenter is us. We are. JCenter.bintray.com is JFrog. So, you see.
Yes.
I don't know if you use Homebrew also.
Homebrew.
So everything that you get from Homebrew is from us also. So we manage all the packages that are coming for Homebrew. We have Jenkins. We have all the plugin of Jenkins, all the development of Jenkins, Spring, all the Spring and the bigger Spring environment. We use the same platform for some of our customers like Cisco and other to actually deploy. So yes, we are in terms of Maven needs packages to actually function. It needs to query those packages and get those packages. And at the end, it creates packages and put it back. NPM, by the way, I forgot also NPM and Bower and Yarn and other packages like that, the same. So we are the warehouse of those packages, and we provide a web front end for all those tools to be able to query, fetch those packages, and put the packages back. So, yeah, we are helping Gradle resolve the packages. And whenever you finish with an AAR, APK, or things like that, you can put it back inside Artifactory to go to the next stage of testing and deployment and environment like that.
Part of Randall's standard introduction is that sometimes we interview people that were using already and didn't know about it, and this shall forevermore be the canonical example of that happening.
Yes. That's what is going on with open source, is that it runs our life and we don't know it, and the software is eating the world anyway. Software.
Yes, I'm curious, is there anybody else in this space, or are you guys pretty much the only solution that's out there?
For Maven, there is our main competition is Sonatype. So they have Sonatype Nexus, and they started from the Maven community. And they have a server, which is called Nexus, that is competing with Artifactory. They are our main competitor. We are both have an open source version and both have a professional version, and we are basically splitting the market. We became more universal. I don't know. More universal is it kind of a strange way of saying if you're universal, how can you be more? But anyway, we open up to more packages. Earlier than Sonatype because they stayed on the Maven ecosystem and the niche a little bit longer. That's the two main player. And after there is each technology is offering their own repository. So NPM, they have NPM Inc. Ruby, they had their own RubyGem server. Docker also, they have their Docker registries. Open source. Every technology has their own single registry and environment. But so the very rapidly for an enterprise and an organization to manage 6 different servers for each technology and each environment, plus it's quite a large amount of storage, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. We have customers with 200 to 300 terabytes of binaries on Artifactory, and we are migrating one soon. It's going to pass the petabyte of binaries. So to multiply those server and multiply those large storage need is quite a big burden, and so that's why a single universal binary repository manager is very useful for customers.
So I just had whispered into my ear that Google and JFrog recently announced that they're working together on something, Graphius, I believe. What is that? Did I pronounce it correctly? And what is that?
Yes. So the what happened once we started Artifactory and be basically the source of truth for binaries, artifacts, for where you're going to fetch your runtime binaries, people started to add very rapidly annotation on top of it and all kind of metadata, which build it came from, which test it passed, who actually used it, and so on and so on. But it was Artifactory specific, and it was, even if our REST API was open and clean, it was also specific to artifacts. Very rapidly, we added X-Ray, which is basically a tool that is able to look inside components to see what there is inside. It's very useful for Docker images, but even for RPM and Debian, which NPM packages are contained inside. And there, the goal was to analyze if there is security vulnerability, license issue, performance issue with some of the component inside and create this component graph. And so basically, the market is eager to have more and more metadata on the software that they are consuming as a first-class citizen. And there was no standard on this metadata. And so internally at Google, they had their own metadata system that they used to certify the images and the Debian packages that are going to production at Google. And they worked to open source it, and since we had also X-Ray and the ability to add and manage those kind of metadata on top of a list of binaries or single binaries, we decided to work together on creating this API and unifying this API and ability to query and add metadata about binaries and artifacts.
So we've got a lot more questions to ask, but I wanted to get in a little piece of business here before we keep going on, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Hover. What are you passionate about? Do you have an idea for a business? Are you launching a creative project? Buying a domain name is the first and biggest step to building your brand online. I have lots of home domains with Hover. I've actually been a customer there since they first started sponsoring Floss Weekly, something like 7 or 8 years ago. So I have every combination of Randall L. Schwartz, because I want to establish the brand as me. So I don't have much for them to do right now. They're all pointing at my LinkedIn page, but hey, someday I'll actually do something behind all those. So Hover has over 400 domain extensions to choose from to help you brand yourself. That's a lot of choices to help you find the perfect domain name. If you're a blogger or a company trying to create new leads or inform your customer base, you can use .blog instead of a generic .com or .biz domain name. By using .blog, you're telling everyone to expect impactful content about your topic or business rather than a generic homepage. Whatever your interest may be, Hover has an extension for you, .tech, .photo, .security. And you know what else is great about Hover? It's best-in-class customer support team and no upsells. The Hover Connect feature allows you to connect your domain name to any host or website builder with a few simple clicks. And that's what I did for my domains. Personalized email that matches your domain and further supports your online identity. Show the online community who you are and what you're passionate about. Go to hover.com/twit and get 10% off your first purchase. That's hover.com/twit. And we thank Hover for their support of Floss Weekly. I've got one question to follow up with here. So is it possible, how do you manage the version dependencies? Is that part of the metadata you were just talking about? And can you get into dependency hell as a result?
Well, this is what we are trying to solve, basically to help our users and customers to focus the dependency help. So the way you declare the dependency in Maven is using the POM XML with npm. It's package.json. In RPM also, you declare all your dependencies. So every tools and every package manager is declaring their dependencies differently. In Docker also, it's the same. And so the goal for our users is to say, here are the packages that I'm depending upon, but I'm going to trust Artifactory, and here is the URL of Artifactory where you're going to find those dependencies. And inside Artifactory, you can have a limited list of version and packages that are going to be used for this dependency resolution. So you fix the dependency hell by basically concentrating the resolution scope for the different tools, but we don't put our finger into the package manager and the different package technology that try to always reinvent the wheel and find a new way to do what Red Hat did correctly with RPM and Debian did really nicely with Debian long ago, but no developer wants to reuse what another one already did.
Yes, not invented here since, definitely. So also, you mentioned a lot of languages. You mentioned integration with Python, with Ruby. What I didn't hear each time was Perl. Do you have integration with the Perl CPAN?
We have PHP, but no, we don't have Perl CPAN.
No.
So you can go to I can go to the Jira. I can check. So we have a public Jira, and you look for Artifactory CPAN and the amount of vote and an environment. I don't know how much is it, but we are listening to the community, and for now. Which is strange because we have a lot of customers that are using Perl and actually Perl and CPAN, but the next one that are coming are there are some Conda is highly demanded with R.
Okay, there are some. The reason I'm asking this is because my primary client right now has a ton of Perl stuff. They're trying to integrate it into this sort of a system, and I don't know what they're actually planning on using, but it would be really nice if we could do that. So anyway, also in the letter you sent us ahead of the show, I know this was a show about Artifactory, but you also list a few things like Bintray and JFrog Mish Control and X-Ray. Can you tell us a little bit about what those are and how they work together with Artifactory?
Yeah. So yeah, we started with Artifactory, which is our flagship product, and we saw quite rapidly that we are missing some kind of a global SaaS platform, easy to use for every developer to publish their artifacts and their to the larger audience. So it's a distribution platform, which is Bintray, bintray.com, and host the Android and Android Studio. Now they have a little bit. The Android Studio is on the side. All the Gradle, JCenter is very popular, and Homebrew is on bintray.com also, and Spring and Spring Artifacts. And after bintray.com, we had customers that started to have a lot of Artifactory servers all around the planet. That needed to be managed in a central and global way. So we created Mission Control, which is basically the ability to control and manage all those Artifactory servers. And our latest product, which is a year and a half old now, is X-Ray, which is the ability to create those component graph and this extra metadata about the artifact. We have also acquired last year, it's at the beginning of the year, Conan.io, which is a C++ manager and which is integrated with Artifactory and on Bintray also. And so the whole Conan community can participate together and sharing their packages and aggregating their packages locally with Artifactory and Bintray. That's basically the suite of product of JFrog. And we are working very, very hard to make it a big, uniform experience for all our users with more feature. But like everything in software, it's never ending what you want to do with your software.
Hey, Fred, I want to jump in and ask a quick question. Those various components that you just outlined for us, obviously you have SaaS offerings for those. Are they also all open sourced?
So Artifactory is open source. Most of our open source work, so if you go to our GitHub repo, which is github.com/jfrogdev, is about integration. So it's people and community doing integration with Artifactory, the Ruby community. And we have a lot of Go also. So all our CLI, command line interfaces, in Go. Most of the build info is also quite popular in terms of interaction with the community. But beside Artifactory, you know, the other products are not open source. They are the bintray.com is offering free storage and distribution for open source project. And we are talking about more than 2 billion downloads per month. 1.5 petabyte a month of data transfer that coming out of our pocket for the open source community to basically distribute your stuff. But Bintray is a pure SaaS platform.
Okay, sure. So I suppose when you're talking about just a service, there isn't really a whole lot to open source behind it. So kind of a category sort of question.
The interfaces, the API and the Bintray REST API, the CLIs, all the Gradle plugins and things like that, they are all open source, and we are working on the pull request, accepting the pull request and working together. Conan is a big project also with a lot of pull request management, community management and things like that.
So what license is Artifactory and the rest of the things that are open source? What licenses have you released it under?
Yeah. So for Artifactory itself, it's AGPL because it's our core product and this is what we are selling. For all the others, it's Apache 2. So everything is Apache 2. Was mainly because we follow Google and Gradle and all those projects and so on. Everything over there is Apache 2.
So one of the things I wanted to follow up on is also the notion of the community around this. Are you getting a lot of contributions from outside JFrog for Artifactory?
So for Artifactory itself, at the beginning, quite a bit, but very rapidly since it became there was the commercial product and the it's a freemium model, so there is the free product and the commercial product on top of it. The number of pull requests on Artifactory itself got reduced, and we have quite a big team working on it. But most of the pull requests are all the things around it. As you can understand, it's basically the conveyor belt is useful if people can put stuff on top of it and put and back and forth things. So this is where the openness of the REST API and the openness of the community and the working with the community. So when we launch Ruby, for example, we worked a lot with the Ruby community, with the NPM community, with the Bower community. So we worked a lot with those community. We worked with the Go community also and with Google, so with Grapheas. So all these kind of interfaces is a huge open source community involvement for developer. But yeah, we end up more as a public REST API provider than open source. Our own software is kind of owned by JFrog. Does it make sense?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And as a amateur astronomer, just to shift gears here for a second, my eyes got big and wide when I saw something about stellarium and you. Can you tell us what that is about, what it involves?
I'm not sure you will like it, but I love the stellarium. And yeah, I have a big 12-inch telescope in my backyard. And so I played with it, and I wanted to do some more stuff, and also migrated to Android some of the stuff, but Google Sky kind of killed it. But basically, yeah, I converted Stellarium C++ to Java, playing with OpenGL. I played a lot with Java OpenGL and GOpenGL, it was a time, it was quite some time ago, and my wife still remembers this time.
And I just found out that there won't be any more iridium flares. I've been watching, I was involved with iridium back in the early days, so I always wanted to look at the sky stuff and see when I could actually see that little bright light, and they've been replacing the satellites with a different configuration now that doesn't have those big flat panels anymore, so no more iridium flares. That's really sort of annoying. So anyway, but thank you for your work on Stellarium. But I do have another very unusual question here that you fed us ahead of time. Why doesn't your mom like open source software?
Yes. That's something that always bothered me, especially actually before creating JFrog. I was using a lot of open source software on my old desktop before Mac became a little bit more open. Was always Debian and Ubuntu. When I tried to convert my mom to open source, to be frank, for example, for my kids, most of the time when they are too small, I just install an Ubuntu version and they never noticed that something is wrong. but <Nice. laughs> with my mom, she kept complaining and I found out that even if it's a small interaction to have someone that you can talk to that is not a geek is really, really helping my mom. She's playing all kind of balls and card games and all kind of things like that on her Windows computer. And the fact that there is a small company that she can send message when something goes wrong is a problem. And all the open source version that she gets when she's really, really lost when it doesn't work for her. And so I really have this, and I think it's part of the JFrog dream, and what JFrog is all about is by creating those pipe and this platform that connect the developer together, to connect all the way to my mom, and to have my mom download it like you download Brew today and the Homebrew things from the JFrog platform, but still have this connection to actually who created it and who you can interact with. And we are already doing it from developer to developer, kind of a communication channel. But I think the next stage is from the consumer to a developer channel. And I have this vision and dream that my mom will be able to talk to someone when she has a problem with her open source software.
As someone that's done tech support, I can tell you that sometimes it's a little scary to let the end users talk directly to the developers.
When an open source project is successful today, quite rapidly people see the value, and there are companies that are created around it. When we started JFrog in 2008, it was still something that was very hard for venture capital and VCs and for the market to understand how you can make money out of something that is free. But today there is quite rapidly a company, and a company will be happy to prospect. It's actually, at the end of the day, my mom is going to be a prospect for any kind of open source software she's using. She's willing to pay a little bit of money for getting some help.
So I wanted to follow up on something we talked about earlier. Artifactory specifically supports, well, you talked about the definition of artifact and how there's, you know, probably 15 different types of files or packages. Is it a challenge to have to at the same time support, you know, a library that's going to get embedded in a jar file and a system library that's going to go in, you know, /lib64 you mentioned images even. Are there any special challenges about supporting all of those different file types?
Yes. So the first challenge is actually the protocol and the metadata format for each one of them. So an RPM information or Debian information an Android archive information is always coded differently, saved differently in a different location. And so for each one of them, we need to kind of understand where the metadata for the package is located. And then there is some kind of a protocol between the tools that are... So we are talking about Yum, so the Yellow Dog Update Manager, which query for all the RPMs, so it has its own protocol and its own way of downloading the index. Ruby is a lot more REST API, so it's actually querying the server a lot more. So each one has a new GET from Microsoft is using OData for search and search capability. Docker is using some TarGZ Docker layer pile with a manifest on top that are placed in a special location in terms of images. So yeah, each one is very particular, but at the end of the day, what we find out, and this is our strength, is that when you have a very strong enterprise-ready storage technology, and we, like I said, we are capable of storing and indexing petabyte of packages, with the metadata and a really good metadata index on top of it, it's getting easier and easier for us to find and to answer those queries and do this work. But yes, it's quite funny to see how much each developer. I'm quite sure there is a psychological study about the developer that created a package manager and the kind of metadata that we can do about why the NPM community did it like that and why the Docker community did it like that and so on. It's quite funny.
So just to make sure I understand, you talked about supporting Yum. Can Artifactory actually work as a Yum repository? Is that the server-side software that we can just simply point Yum to and they'll talk to each other natively?
Exactly. Yes. Oh. And so the power of it is that when you run a create repo on your Unix box, so it's reading the RPMs and creating this index that Yum needs when it downloads it. With Artifactory, the metadata and the list of files are basically in a database. And so the index data and the list of files in the database. So it's a select that goes extremely fast. The list of files that change is extremely fast. So we can create the repository in 1/10 of the time that a create repo can do. And we are doing it on millions of files and terabyte and hundreds of terabytes of storage. So basically it's a... Yeah, it's the server-side create repo, Yum repository on steroid.
This project gets more exciting the more I learn about it, actually. So I've got to ask, with all of these different things you support, are there any really unusual stories that you have or something just really novel and out of the box that someone has used Artifactory for?
So yeah, so we have a generic repo that is used and people put things in. So we can say that it's unusual, but we have there is a Chinese company that put layers on their players. So they have this kind of players. It used to be sexy a long time ago to have all kind of audio player that are not from Apple. and you could change the skin and things like that. And people were just sharing their skins to do the design. And so they use Artifactory to actually deploy those skins and add. We have more and more. When you think about it, Homebrew is a little bit like that. Which other plugins? So we do the Jenkins plugin, we do more and more of this kind of architecture. So on top of Artifactory, manage the plugins and the plugins architecture, makes sense. And to be frank, the most horror story or Halloween story, if we want, is a technology I don't know if you know about. It's called OSGI. So everybody that played with OSGI is probably suffering quite a bit. But this one was really really a challenge for us on our side, and the dependency hell reached amazing level where basically it's mathematically impossible to do the resolution, the dependency graph resolution. So there is someone that proved that the way they declare the dependency and the way they manage their dynamic dependency, there is a mathematical impossibility to resolve them.
Wow, amazing. So, hey, we're almost out of time. But I did want to get to the one question that you gave us ahead of time. It says, we've seen you coin the term liquid software. Can you share more about what that means and why it's so important?
Yes. So we keep talking about software packages, and this is the way we manage software for quite some time. But what we see today is that those packages are getting smaller and smaller, and we are releasing it more and more often. So the natural direction of using UPS 9,000 times a day for delivering packages that are a couple of kilobytes, to consider them as packages doesn't make much of a sense. And the way we think about it today is really in terms of a liquid. It became a continuous flow of software. So you have a continuous flow of software from all the different software producer and software vendors. And the software consumer, instead of saying, I'm going to use framework X, Y, Z, version one, they're going to say, I'm trusting this actual provider, and whatever version they're going to provide me, I'm going to use them, and I'm going to integrate with them, and I'm going to... So we became, instead of being into the delivery and the UPS business, we start to be into the plumber and the pipe business. And we really, really see this transformation today, especially with security vulnerability and things like that. Red Hat is kind of doing that, but they are not doing it as fast as they should. To be frank, with Artifactory, when... there was Heartbleed and things like that. It's a lot faster to deliver the package to the end production system as fast as possible. I think most of the big cloud provider are actually our customer, and they use Artifactory to do this kind of stuff. So we are the big pipes in the wall that you don't see, but we're making sure that you have clean water at your tap, and this is. This is the goal of liquid software, to have the latest version. Another change that's happening, by the way, is continuous update. We saw it with the phone when you, I don't, well, we are old people here, so it's okay. but to get an update on our phone, we used to need to go to the shop, and the shop was plugging it and trying to put a new version or fix whatever. Then we needed to download the firmware on the laptop and do some kind of scary procedure with a USB connection. And then it went over the air. And today, for most of the apps and most of the system, it's just continuously flowing, and we are continuously updating our phone. And so to consider those apps as actual packages doesn't make much of a sense. At the end of the day, you just connect those pipes to whatever vendors, which is Google or Apple or others, and they are providing the flow.
I appreciate the explanation. That's actually a very clear model to move to. So I really like that. Like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we let you go?
Whatever we say, we still love Java and we still do a lot. But we have a lot of Go. We do quite a lot of Go and Go software. X-Ray is fully in Go. And Groovy. We use a lot of our scripting and environment and plugin architecture is based on Groovy. So it's a JVM-based language. And the distribution today is also Docker. So Docker, Kubernetes, and our collaboration with Google is very, very strong. So most of our SaaS today move to Kubernetes. And we are, this is also the DevOps wave is the ability to adapt your architecture and to change and to use the latest and greatest technology and be capable of change. And there is no free lunch. It's still some work, but as long as you do it safely and securely and you have everything running and your CI pipeline running correctly, it's always fun to watch.
Cool. Hey, so I got to ask two more questions, or else my audience gets mad. So, what's your favorite scripting language?
When JFrog was only, we were 8 employees. Today we are 250. Wow. I was the SaaS, I wrote everything in an amazing language, which is called Bash.
I
used to be Emacs, but today with the Mac I'm using Text Wrangler, but he wants me to move to BB Edit and I don't want to.
Okay. Well, I imagine you can make Emacs emulate those too. So if you just want to choose back and forth, I'm sure Emacs has enough technology in it to do that. So, yes, that's cool. Hey, this has been
about scripting. I want to say that I still prefer Groovy. I really like Groovy language.
Got it. Hey, you know, it's been wonderful. It's been, I'll back Jonathan's statement on this. And the more we heard about this, the more fascinating the project became. So definitely need to up your ante a little bit on your website so that we don't get this distinguished like that. So I'm sure you'll have a good challenge to do that. So thank you for coming on the show today and talking to us about everything JFrog's doing, including Artifactory, which is a primary version reason for you to be here. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was really nice to be on your show.
Cool. And that was Fred Simon talking to us about Artifactory. What do you think there, sir? Jonathan?
I think it's interesting that one of the shows that I expected to know the least about was the one that I've used maybe the most. Really, really interesting. I want to learn more about their, dive in, maybe even set up my own version of where they can host RPMs and talk directly to Yum. I suppose I should have asked if they have a plugin to talk to DNF yet. Red Hat's new package manager they're looking to move to. But really, really, really interesting and definitely something to keep in the back of my mind in case a project ever comes up that needs that that specific use case.
Well, I'm disappointed that there's no Perl support, because then it means I can't actually recommend this to my primary client, ZipRecruiter, because we have a lot of integrated Perl code. We have to have that in our delivery system. So anyway, that's okay. It still seems really fascinating. It's been around for a while. It's mature. There are hosted versions of it if you really need that kind of commercial support and don't want to host it yourself. So that's pretty cool. So speaking of upcoming guests, we've got Crail next week, which is high-performance storage and networking. Offnet, which is providing Wi-Fi hotspots with local content in Zimbabwe. I'm really looking forward to that one. Let's hope that the Skype gods are going to be okay with that one. Jewelbots, which was something I saw at allthingsopen.org last week, or was it 2 weeks ago? Last week? Which is a friendship bracelet that you can code. So you're getting teenage and pre-teenage girls coding in C++. That is cool. That is very cool. excuse me. Dell, their code projects, Curly Brace, Code Close Curly Brace, just added to the schedule. We're going to get a representative from SUSE, which is one of the oldest distributions out there. And I can't believe we haven't had them on the show yet. We've had people representing Sault Ste., but not like the head dudes. So this will be fun. And rounding up the schedule so far is Linkerd, which is a transparent proxy that adds service discovery routing and fail handling for your containerized solutions. You can find all those out and more by going to twit.tv/floss. That's the homepage for the show. Linked from there is the big spreadsheet, as we like to call it. You can see how I'm doing in terms of getting all the bookings put in and things. And if you have a project that's not on that list, please, please let me know about it. So have the project leader or community coordinator email me, marlin@stonehenge.com. You don't have to write that down. It's actually on the homepage right there. So that's good for that. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. Keep in mind the Pacific time changes, I think it's next week. So I know we change at a different time from Europe. So it's be sure you tune in at the right time, because it's going to be off by an hour from what you had been doing. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. I was just in Raleigh for allthingsopen.org. Had a great time there. Definitely looking forward to going back again. I was in Baltimore to visit some friends and see some local things. That'd be pretty cool. I have another cruise through the Panama Canal in January coming up. So I'll be offline for, I think, one or two sessions. So we'll have to get the whole co-host thing all worked out again. Is there anything you want to plug, Jonathan?
You can just follow me on Twitter at JP_Bennett. And I will probably not be here next week unless none of the other guys are available. And then I guess I'll be back once again.
All right. That sounds good. That sounds good. And thank you for stepping in at the last moment again, as you often do. And I appreciate you being willing to put up with being on this twice in a row. I mean, I'm twice in a row a lot of times, but it's nice when the co-hosts are also willing to step up to do that. I think you did three in a row once. Didn't you do three in a row once?
Yes. Just a couple of weeks ago, I finished up three in a row.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Well, again, thank you for your your time and energy. And I guess there's nothing else to say except we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.